Radio Decidimos.
So, welcome back everybody to a new session of Decidim Stories. Now it's the turn of Europe. It is a pleasure for me to moderate this panel. We have four very interesting experiences from three different regions and different scales of governance, and one of them is basically the largest democratic institution we have in the continent, which is the European Commission. So I don't want to take much time from our speakers. I'm going to introduce them, and hopefully we'll have some time at the end to get some questions from the audience. So online we have Nadia von Valmos. She is the product manager of the city of Lucerne. I don't know if we have them online. Hello, Nadia. Can you hear us well? Yeah, I think so. I'm just finishing introducing everyone, and then we will start with the presentations. We also have Paolo Rosa, who works at the European Commission. Paolo, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And we also have Sana Gottby and Oivind Tanum from Digidem Lab.
Yeah, hi. Actually, Oivind is not from Digidem Lab, but I am.
Ah, okay. Okay. And here in the States, we have Pauline Vessol and Virgil Deville, from Open Source Politics. So we will follow the order we have in the program. We will start with Nadia. She will introduce us the use case of the city of Lucerne in Switzerland. So, Nadia, whenever you want.
Yes, hello everyone, and thank you a lot for having me. I think I put on my camera also. Now we should be ready. I can actually hear myself. Maybe can you do something about it? Okay, anyway, I start. Yeah. Okay. I'm calling from the city of Lucerne. Here on this slide you can see where we are located in Europe, for those who don't know. And we are a rather small city with 82,000 inhabitants and about the same number of people who work in the city. And we have a lot of visitors, as you can see on the picture maybe. And I think the most interesting about the project we started is that we don't have the initiatives in the focus, but other participative spaces. And this is what I will talk about in the next 5 minutes. An overview about of Decidim. Maybe it is important to understand that we are a city administration, but our platform is not only made for us. I tried to build this in the picture on the right side, where you can see that we are also putting in content in the platform, but we are only one of many organizations who do this. We invited the neighboring municipalities to also do it, sport association, cultural associations, other associations, and also institutions who are commercially active. I will shortly explain the components of how we use the platform. I assume that many of you know about the participatory spaces, that's why I built it like this. First, I start with the assembly. Actually, we use the assembly for all the organizations that I mentioned before, who can open up an account. and put in any information they want. I summarized it shortly here. Like, you can see that at the moment we have 21 organizations from the city district who are active, but also invited over 400 other associations to open up a space where they can use all the functionalities who are available in the assembly module. The process as participatory space, we use it for our projects. Like at the moment, we have a lot of city projects who are on the platform where people can inform themselves about what the city plans, and sometimes participate, but not in the same depth, maybe. Sometimes it's only a survey, and on the other projects, it's also the proposal module. And we are also open for other organizations if they want to have bigger projects, that they can also use the process module for their own use. The next part we have on the website is the meetings, where maybe all of you know that you can take them out of the assemblies and the processes, so people will have an overview about everything that is going on in the city. This is from a sports event until an information participatory event. Like everything you can imagine. And something that we think is very interesting is that we want to build some sort of our own social media network. Like not social media, but we try to copy the newsfeed function of social media platforms. And we do this by using the blog module out of the assembly and the process participatory spaces. At the moment, it looks like this, and we are trying to build a page that looks more or less like a newsfeed as people know it from Facebook and co. And our vision is to someday get independent from using the big platforms. I know it's a big vision, but we try to go this way. One thing that I think is maybe interesting to discuss in this round is we in Switzerland, we already have initiatives and consultations. Like it's a thing we have in our direct democracy. And for us, it is rather hard to know how we should start to digitalize this project. Not project, this process, because it's already in existing. Like, is it harder to try to put up initiatives digital if you already have a way to do it analog? Or should it be easier because we already know the process? In this, with these two spaces, we have a lot of questions open. And if anyone would like to discuss with us, like I think we have the possibility here. Or then get in touch anyway at the email I show here. And at last, I have a short overview because we are not the only ones in Switzerland using Decidim. There are a lot of interesting projects going on. And I also get calls every week from other cities who are interested in what we do. So I think Switzerland is on the go for Decidim. Yeah, thank you a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Nadia, for your presentation. We hope we have some time at the end to comment on this use case in Lucerne. Yeah. But now we are going with Paolo, who is presenting how the CDM is enabling the conference on the future of Europe. Paolo?
Yes, thank you. So just give me 1 second to set up everything. Mm-hmm. sorry. You are ready. Seeing the last, the end of the presentation. So I hope you can see now the screen and also the presentation. So I'll start by providing you yes.
Now
I'll start by providing some context about the conference itself. So the Conference on the Future of Rubrik can be seen as a pan-European participatory process that is composed by multiple events, and it's open to everyone. So citizens, civil society, stakeholders can go to the platform and participate also in the events being organized physically online and share their own ideas. The conference in itself is a priority from the Commission. This is described in priority number 6, a new push for European democracy. And there it's already written that European citizens should have a greater say in the future of the European Union and should have an active role in setting the priorities. So this is, let's say, the ground base for the Conference on the Future of Europe. The conference in itself is a joint initiative. So while it's based on the proposal from the Commission, the three institutions, so the Parliament, the Council, and the Commission, have the same authority and have to agree on all the formal procedures and on the outcomes of the conference. This is also important because the conference is more than a listening exercise, and there is a commitment to follow up on the recommendations that came out of the conference, of course, within the sphere and the competence of the three institutions. So the conference, let's say, started on the 19th of April with the launch of the online platform. Then there was a formal event on the 9th of May, and it's expected to reach conclusions by spring of 2022. Now, the conference in itself is composed by four main components. I won't go into much detail, but just for you to have an idea of the process. Collecting the ideas of citizens, but it's also a place where decentralized events can be announced and they can happen. Then we have four European, four matching citizens panels that meet each three times. And then you have the plenary of the conference. In all of these elements, the only one that has, executive decision is the executive board, and you'll be responsible for the final decisions of the conference. Now, as you must imagine, considering that this is a pan-European exercise and involving the 27 member states, the digital platform has a very important role, even more with the recent pandemics, with COVID-19. And the platform is not only a place where all the information about the conference is happening, but is also a place where all the ideas are being collected. And this is done with 10 headline topics. This being said, there was a, in order to have a platform that was adequate to the needs and to the requirements of the conference, there was a an assessment of potential online platform for this purpose. We wanted more than a simple website. We wanted for citizens to have the possibility to have a true pan-European debate. And so because there wasn't anything available on the Commission, we went outside and looked at what was already available. And we did a market research on potential platforms. This was also based from a business perspective. So looking at what was there in terms of deliberative potential, in terms of multilingualism, how face-to-face interactions could be combined with online, but also from IT perspective. So in terms of security, data ownership, licensing model, and possible integration with the Commission. So I think it's obvious that from this analysis, the CDEM was a selected platform. Of course, the platform that we are using was customized for our needs, and I wanted to highlight three main features that I consider relevant for the context of the conference. The first one is the multilingualism. The platform all the content of the platform is available in the 24 EU languages, and this is done both manual translation and automatic translation. So all official content is manually translated, while the contributions from citizens, so be it in the form of ideas or comments, this is automatically translated using the Commission proprietary tool they translate to. The second aspect that I find relevant is the type of interaction that is possible to happen on the platform. So there are four main ways to interact. So citizens can submit their ideas in any of the 24 EU languages. They can comment on others' ideas. So the idea is to promote a debate around the ideas that were submitted. Anyone also can organize an event on the platform, be it a citizen, be it a civil society organization. So this is another aspect. What is important to mention here is that the events need to comply with the conference charter. And in the end, a report must be produced and it will have a clear list of ideas that came out of this event. And the last one is, of course, you can also attend one of the many events that are already happening throughout Europe. And just to give you a few numbers, so at the moment we have more or less 600 ideas. We have 3,000 events. So this just to give you a picture of what is happening on the conference. The last element that I would like to mention is indeed the scale of all of this. We are involving the 27 member states. There are events happening throughout all of these 27 member states, both official and events organized by third parties. And events are happening in 24 EU languages. So I think this is an important factor that shows really the endeavor that is behind the conference. At the moment, we have around 3.5 million unique visitors of the website. Of course, we want to have a much higher reach, and that's why it's also important to advertise even more the platform and the conference, and anyone can go there in their sake. I'll just finish by saying that we are also committing to have a very transparent process. We are producing periodic reports. You can go to the platform. All of this is available there, and you can look at the information. So, in the sense that you can see what are the ideas being discussed. These ideas are being analyzed by the Joint Research Center using an automatic analysis tool, but also by an external contractor manually. We are creating this cluster of ideas based on the content. You can also see what are the most, what are the topics that are raising more interest from citizens. At this moment is European democracy and climate change in the environment, to give an example. Curiously enough, the topic of health that has the least number of contributions being in terms of ideas and comments. But you can also see how different member states are contributing to the conference and what is the social demographics of the participants. So I'll finish here and thank you.
Thank you, Pablo. Okay, now we're going to learn about the same initiatives, this use case of how the French Parliament are using the CDM for their petitions. Virgil, Pauline, whenever you want.
Okay, I have to take off my glasses, so I will put some other.
Yeah.
Okay. Mejor. Now I can do it. Thanks again for inviting us to the fest. It's always a pleasure. We've been coming four years in a row, so it's nice to see everybody. I'm apologizing in advance for the weird accent. We've been mixing English and Spanish, and right now I feel like I'm speaking with an Italian accent in English. It's kind of weird. So I apologize in advance. We want to present you what we did with the French Parliament, both the Senate and the National Assembly in France, with the Decidim initiatives module. Yeah, over there. And basically, I'm going to give a little context while the slide goes. We have a right for petition in France that has been in place for many years now. It was an analog right. You have to send a pile of signatures to the National Assembly, and then they will compile it, and you would basically, there were like almost no petitions that went through and were addressed by the parliament. This right exists from the 1960s, and recently in 2019, there was a new reglement that say, okay, we are going to digitize this service, and both the French Senate and the National Assembly has to do it in a slightly different ways, but almost similar. Basically, when they were doing this, when they were told that they had to do this, they did a benchmark and they had a couple of questions on how they would do it. There was a lot of questions around, would it be an internal development? Would it be outsourced to some private company? And you can imagine the lobby that change.org, make.org made so that they could get this visibility. Fortunately for them, the CDM exists, and they were able to contract us to do an open source, to use an open source platform to do the petition right. But they also benchmarked the one in the UK and the one from the White House. But the CDM was the one they chose to go with for a number of reasons, because it has more flexibility in terms of how you can configure your rights for petition, and basically. The CDM stuff. You can have different type of signatures per scope. It's very configurable. So once they decided, it was funny because we had like this talk with the Senate and the friend and the National Assembly, and they can't talk together because they are usually they hate each other. So we were saying, yeah, the CDM and the CDM here, and then like they ended up choosing the same solution and trying to work on the roadmap, but they. We were like the middleman. It was kind of weird, so we tried to make like as much in common, so it wasn't a nightmare in terms of software building. But the challenges were common. They wanted to do something that would use an identification service that would say that we are talking with real people, that we are at least have registered in some French database, but also they wanted anonymity. of the people who would sign, so you can imagine the mess, and show also that we only have one signature per person on each petition, and because they saw the Brexit example, they wanted to do 200k signatures per hour, which is also messed up. So with that in mind, we went into kamikaze mode, and we say, okay, let's do it. We're gonna have fun. And then the pandemic hit us, so we had to do this during the COVID. And that entertained us for a while. So basically, the most specific thing that there is on this project is the identification system, where we use a French exception. Again, the EID system in France, it's based basically on the French digital services, so you can log in with your health account, your public pension account, even the postal services. This sends data to some kind of wrapper that says, okay, you exist in the register of persons in France, and it can send a bunch of data to, to some external application. And basically what we had to do is, in order to ensure anonymity for the signatories, we had to do a separate flow for signatories. So where we, on one side, when you register as someone who wants to sign a petition, you will only get like a unique ID that is randomized every time you log in, I think, so that I cannot connect you with your author account, where I need to know if you're presenting a petition to the French Assembly, I need to know who you are. So where I would get the name, the surname, the birth date, because only people who are 18 years old can do it, and your email so I can contact you. So that's resulted in a parallel sign-up flow where you can on the website you say register as a signatory, register as an author, and it looks like this. I was really afraid that would really mess up with people's head. It doesn't in the end. We can thank the developers and the people who worked on the project because it's working okay. So we have also a dedicated authorization handler for each of the flows. So an authorization handler for the people who sign, an authorization handler for the people who are authors of petitions, so we can check if they are 18 years old or whatever. Basically, the other challenge was a performance issue. As you know, the CDM is not the best student in the class when it comes to performance. We tried to contact some guy who had a very similar problem. So this guy on the slide is a Rails core developer, but also he did the optimization for the UK Parliament website. And it was a nightmare for him too. And he was able to use the Amazon Web Services, and we couldn't, so we had more issues than him. But basically, he helped us understand. For example, for the UK, they had on the page they had a real-time counter, and that when you have the Brexit petition, it really messes up with the servers. So they had to fake the counter, because if they were to calculate it in real time, it would break the application every time there was a big petition coming. So he helped us with a few flows, telling us, okay, you should probably do this here, probably do this here. So we can thank him. He did all of this for the cause, so thanks to him. And the other optimization that we had to do, so we had some software things that we did, and we also did with caching and these kind of things, and we also did some horizontal scaling of putting several application servers. So the result is these two websites that you can go visit, petitions.senate.fr, petitions.nationalassembly.fr. And in terms of figures, you know, how successful the project is, well, fortunately enough, it's a good success. These are actually the two biggest Decidim instances that there are with real people behind it, because we know they are like real citizens or real humans. The National Assembly is 170,000 users. The Senate is 140,000 users. We have, I told you there was no petition before. Now we have 1,200, around 500,000 signatures, and also 100 official response. So it's pretty much a success, but now Pauline is going to tell you how it's also a failure.
Pauline, 1 minute, I think.
Un minuto?
I think we have 1 minute
okay.
Left.
Bueno, no hay presentación. Bueno, no pasa. So I'm going to talk about the challenges, like in terms of politics, we had to face, because we want citizen voice to be heard a lot more, and we had the case with one petition that reached the goal of the 100,000 signatures. For in the Senate platform, like a really with a big communication, and it was for French disability allowance, and that's a really big deal in France, because like you can't have the allowance if your husband or your wife earns like more than a certain kind of thing, and. The problem was that like it reached the goal, and then it went to the Senate. They made a bill, and the majority in the French Parliament, the French National Assembly, blocked everything, because like they said it was too difficult to do it technically to do the thing. So the thing I want to say is, it's really cool to have a e-petitions platform for Parliament, but again, and I think it's something we all know, when there's no binding processes, when the institution doesn't want to hear or doesn't really care, is my opinion, doesn't really care about what people want, it's a real problem, because it discourages citizens. Like we always say in France, like people doesn't want to participate, they don't care about politics, and that this kind of thing was really disgusting for us because we really wanted to do something.
Yeah, thank you, Pauline. I'm sorry that I pushed you to finish, but we're running out of time here. Okay, now we're going to travel north. Thank you. We're going to finish with the use case in the Nordics. We're going to see some examples of digital citizen participation in Nordic countries with Sanna Godby and Øyvind Tano.
Thank you. let's see, I'm just gonna check.
Are you guys there?
Yeah. Thank you for having us. I just want to say that there's a bit of an echo. So if it can be solved, that's great. Otherwise, I'm just going to try to compete against my own voice. So I'm Sanna, and I'm from Digitum Lab. We're a democracy lab based in Sweden. And we work with supporting municipalities, not just in Sweden, but also in other parts of the world. For example, we've been working with the European Commission. So I'm really glad to see Paolo here, and also with the US, together with OSP. But today I'm here to focus more on the Nordic examples of digitizing. And later I'm going to focus on a research project that we have together with a couple of Nordic actors, and also the work that we're doing in Helsinki at Sweden. And then Øyvind, that represents the municipalities in Norway, is going to talk about examples from there. So first off, I'm just going to explain a little bit about research projects that we have right now running for 3 years. It's called ColdDigit, so it stands for Collective Intelligence for digital tools, basically. And what we're looking at is how the use of digital tools can increase collective intelligence, specifically in the Nordic context. And as you know, the Nordic context is different from the rest of the world. Had a history of a strong welfare state, which had led to, in a way, an increased trust. I mean, we don't have the same history as, for example, Spain, with a lot of social movements recently having large distrust against government and doing a lot of bottom-up movement. But we still have a lot of inequalities in the Nordic. So you can say that for like over years, the welfare state has slowly been eroding a lot in a lot of the Nordic countries, and we can see the effects of that right now. And also, we do not have, at least in Sweden, that strong of a culture when it comes to open source tools. So we have a bit of a challenge. And what we're doing in this research project called Digit is that we're exploring a lot of different types of tools, and not just Decidim. We're trying to categorize among about 150 to 300 different types of digital tools, and also looking both at case studies, examples of tools, comparisons of tools, different types of tools, like you can see in the slide, anything from crowdsourcing, AR, AI, e-democracy, and e-participation. And we're also testing tools in different pilots in several Nordic countries. And all of this is together with the University of Helsinki, Nesta in the UK, the University of Gothenburg, us, and a research institute in Norway called SINTEF, and then the municipality of Helsinki, and the housing company in Gothenburg. So there's a lot of actors. And we really hope that we'll be able to have a lot of interesting results that can contribute to the CIDIM community as well. And just to give you an example of the type of questions that we're looking at connected to this theme and in these Nordic countries, is that you're all probably very familiar with the participatory budget in Helsinki. That is a great example of how a first piece of the theme and the first time trying a central PP really led to high participation rates. But of course, there are a lot of challenges there as well that the university is looking at currently. So, for example, they're doing a lot of evaluations with citizens, civil society, the municipality, decision makers, and also doing a lot of big data analysis of the platform and social media. And what they want to see and what they hope to kind of do research about for the future is, for example, how to increase the number of innovative proposals, because right now a lot of the proposals are very similar to things that the municipality is doing anyways, nothing like standing out. So how can we create the innovation of citizens to come up with things that decision makers would never think of? Another thing is how we can build together with civil society, because a lot of civil society groups are kind of a bit skeptical against the process because they feel like sometimes it's top down, and we don't want that feeling. We want to see how we can create more collaborations from bottom up. Also, there's a sense of competition between citizens that I think many of you are familiar with when you're doing municipal budgets, where people feel like this is my proposal and everyone just works individually. So it's the classic challenge of how can we create collaborations online as well as offline? How can we create stronger communities between citizens so that they can collaborate across their proposals? And also, how can we create more equal participation, since it's not equal right now among neighborhoods? And these challenges are, I would say, similar to the ones that we want to work with in Sweden. So in Sweden, we have worked for about 3 years with the housing company in Gothenburg. And what they've been doing is that they've been using the system for their participatory budget that they're doing with tenants that live in low-income areas of Gothenburg. What tenants are able to respond to the housing company's budgets. And a trend that we're seeing right now is that more and more neighborhoods in Gothenburg are doing participatory budgets with their tenants and are there. We're trying to do more and more, and also that the city of Gothenburg is interested in using the Decidim centrally and providing that support to all the district in Gothenburg, which is something that we've been recommending for a while. And in these examples that we're looking at for the research project, we have similar interests as the ones in Helsinki. We want to see how we can create collaborations between citizens, both online and offline, and how we can connect people together. How we can create more long-term participation so that the processes that they do is based on things that the community needs for the future and not just short-term projects. And also how to mainstream the process and increase knowledge among the community servants internally. So now Øyvind is going to talk about the Norwegian example.
Okay. Thank you, Sana. I think now it's turn to listen to Øyvind, but I just want to let you know, Øyvind, that we're really running out of time. You have 3 minutes. I don't know if you can, in 3 minutes, make your intervention. Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, 3 minutes, it'll be fine.
Thank you.
So, thank you for the invitation. My name is Øyvind, I'm head of Smart City in Trondheim, and in this case I'm representing the Norwegian Smart City Network. And one of the things we're trying to achieve is to make it easier for other municipalities to increase their competence on digital participation. And after like doing a lot of research and collaborating with scientists, we quickly found out that Decidim is basically the best solution out there. So what we are trying to do is to provide the technology along with a knowledge and support to Norwegian municipalities. So a couple of weeks ago, during Nordic Edge and Nordic Smart City Conference, we launched a national platform for digital participation. The platform is now used by almost 20 municipalities, but it's available for all 356 municipalities in Norway. And this platform basically have 3 parts. We have the technology, which is Decidim, which means that we are setting up Decidims for all the municipalities that want to use it, and we are providing the technical know-how and actually doing the technical part. So they don't need to care about that part. And then we have a national network of people working with participation in the different municipalities, using Decidim as a platform. And as we are doing processes out in the municipalities in Norway, we're also gathering knowledge to create a common knowledge base that we can build on and where we can learn from each other. So right now we have 20 platforms, give or take, set up that different municipalities are using. And the cities here are, this is a bit of an old map, so we have more cities now. But the amount are increasing quite rapidly. And we have gotten a lot of interest since we launched the platform on Nordic Edge. And as one of our collaborators says, most of the people in an organization are not technical people. And this has a lot to do, rather to say, of how we approach this. So we want to remove as many of the technical barriers as we can, so that the municipalities can start with doing the actual participation, because that's what we want. We want to have good citizen participation across countries and across cities.
Thank you.
So yeah, that's basically it. Thank you.
I'm sorry, guys, that we have to wrap it up here. We ran out of time. But thank you to all the speakers for joining us. And we're going to the next session, which is the CDIM in America and Asia.